Tonight, pretty late favorite Brandon C. Price rides sidecar. Later, we chat with our friends from Verizon about the future. And finally, the Marines rock the studio for New Music Monday. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Oh, how great is that to say? The Marines rock the studio. For Music Monday, we have the first Marine Division jazz rock combo. And a little bit of radio magic secret. We recorded them earlier.
Right. We did that.
Yeah. We won't be able to see them on the live stream. I have dozens of pictures. But there was a lot of chaos. Last week, I was not feeling great. And I'm pretty sure I hallucinated many conversations that I had. Esmeralda, have you ever had a fever where you're like, you're pretty sure you said something out loud and no one believes you?
Not a fever, but if I wake up half asleep.
Right, where I think I've had a conversation.
I say things that are like, that made no sense.
I said them. I'm not sure if anyone heard them.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, that happened.
I think you're like telepathically?
There's a lot to coordinate. Look, Rob Martier, when Marines are coming in studio, that's sort of a daunting aspect, right?
No, it's intense.
So you feel like you should respond right away. We can be in your studio on Monday night. And then you say yes, which is what I did. I said yes. I said, oorah, what time, sir? And originally, they were going to be here for the whole week. And by the way, the Marines are performing at the Buffalo Wings in Round Lake on Wednesday at 6 p.m., but they have performances all over the Chicagoland area. And they had to cut their week short. They're only going to be in town till Thursday, and they asked if they could be here at 6 o'clock today. I had that information, and it turns out I told nobody else. It was 6 o'clock. Craig and Bob Ferguson continued to operate on the assumption that it was at the regular time,
midnight, were live.
Uh-huh. Which was what I had understood on the first day, but that changed. And here's what happened. It turns out that because the drummer, Staff Sergeant Parks, informed me that you can only operate a government-issue vehicle on certain numbers of hours of sleep. So he has to go to bed by a certain time if they know he's waking up at a certain time. So he could not physically be here and still drive the government Marine issue, I'm guessing.
This is all true.
I'm going to say battle van.
It looked kind of like a battle van.
Do you think the jazz rock combo band has a battle van? They should.
I rode in their van. I helped them park. I was in the battle
van. What did they have?
It was just like a kind of a beat up van.
Oh.
It wasn't really battle
Don't tell
friendly.
People that.
No, it was a lovely van that had a lot of weapons.
Don't you think that the jazz rock Marine Corps combo band should also have like some sort of heavy artillery equipped?
I do think there should be some sort of secret button. By the way, engineer here, Jake Alderman, did a great job of filling in.
Stepped in.
Yep.
We
nailed it. So
yes,
the recording happened at 6 o'clock.
Because I should tell people things.
Well, you know, we made it work.
You
so
did. You did, and it was miraculous.
Yeah, it was great.
I want to thank everyone for making that happen.
They sounded amazing.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. And you thought you said something.
Oh.
So it's the thought that counts.
I would not be surprised if I said absolutely nothing to anyone except the person I was texting with directly, which was Sergeant Paraka. So, I mean, in my mind, it's the same thing that happens at home. Like, Steve will say something like, what's for dinner? And I hear, where's my dinner, woman? And he's like, I didn't say that. And I'm like, but that's what I heard. And I think that's kind of what happened last week where I said that the Marines will be here on Monday. And I didn't finish with at 6. So
we also do a Marine movie night, which we've done once before.
And
that would make a lot more sense to happen at 6 because that doesn't take as much work to pull off as a recording or anything else. If it's a band, that actually takes a lot more moving parts.
And what happened was I told you about Semper Film,
mm-hmm.
didn't tell Sergeant Paraka.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, got it.
So
okay.
He says that's not going to happen for a while.
Oh.
Because I haven't informed them of that situation.
Oh.
So probably the week of May 9th
Got
for
it. Okay.
Semper Film.
Well, that's fine. We'll do another Semper Film then.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's what, and actually I talked to Bob, that's what both of us were expecting at 6 was Semper Film.
And that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
It was not.
It's not as easy. It's not as hard to do that as a band. Like, bands are harder.
Esmeralda, what do you think a Marine Corps jazz rock combo band would be playing? It's a little surprising.
Yeah, go ahead. Pick
a
song.
Just pick a song.
Out of anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Rob, either one of you.
Some like Miles Davis?
That's what I was expecting.
Is that too crazy?
It's okay.
Rob?
Are they doing like hybrids on classic rock songs? Like, let's say, Back in Black?
Ooh.
Would have been cool. Also didn't happen.
I saw their list. I should have checked. I was just locked into the three they played for us.
They performed three songs for us.
Mm-hmm.
Hello by Adele.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, see? All right. See? Very right? surprising. All right. See? Already
and
off.
And beautifully done.
Waiting on the World to Change by John Mayer.
Mm-hmm. And thirdly.
Smells Like Teen Spirit Nirvana.
Nice.
What?
Yeah.
Interesting. There where do go. They play? As in, like, where do they, like, where are they going to go?
Play? They play all over the world, actually.
They play a lot of private stuff, too.
Okay.
There's only one upcoming appearance that's. Allowed the public's allowed at. I think it's at the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Buffalo Wild Wings in Round Lake at 6 p.m.
Now, is the other stuff specifically government related?
They play
events?
At the College of DuPage
today.
They're playing at other places like that. So it's not just like government stuff.
Parades and public functions. Yeah.
They were just in France, they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
What were they doing there?
They were performing. I mean, I think they were performing. They
were at
the...
Otherwise,
it makes no sense to mention.
Exactly. No, we were like, we should have asked more questions. We were in Paris, France. I'm like, how did the French like you?
Yeah, and he said
they liked us very much. When Lady Liberty opened again, since I guess I didn't realize that the crown that had not been opened since 9/11, they were there for the grand reopening of Lady Liberty as well. So with functions like that, some of them, it depends on what they're assigned to. There are musicians that actually stay at either one of the recruit depots, whether it's at Paris Island or in San Diego. They play for the graduations. They play for the raising of the colors and lowering of the colors every day. But obviously, one of the main, one of important functions that they also perform is at funerals, at affairs of the state, whether it's for the president of the United States or government functions all over the country.
Yeah, but, that's what I would have imagined. That's all they did.
But they also, one of the things that I'm trying to understand even more so is the idea that having the band, whether it's the Marine Corps, the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force. I really got upset a few weeks ago when a representative from Arizona said, we really need to do away with musicians. She really said this out loud, by the way. We need to get rid of musicians in the military. They should be picking up a wrench instead of a clarinet. Okay. Here's the thing, is that there are many reasons and many functions for the bands in the military. And one of them is that it is symbolic. It is an important aspect of our military. It's just sort of sad. We'll just cut the music. Let's just get rid of that. That seems very easy. And when you start pulling away at elements like that, it really is part of the tradition and the meaning of what it means to be a part of, just our American culture. It's important. And we'll learn more about them when we come back later on. It's going to be at midnight. Before that, now, Esmeralda, are you absolutely sure you don't want a Philly's Best sandwich?
No, I'm good.
Rob, you're in.
Thank you, though.
I'm in.
All right. Craig,
Esmeralda,
you're in.
They come with Cheese Whiz.
Yeah. I already ate.
There's Cheese Whiz on the sandwich.
I already ate and I have food here.
I don't know how you not.
Have you had this before?
It's so good.
It's so good.
I'll share some of mine with her.
Yeah, she
I'm putting the order
actually
in.
Say no.
It's happening.
Right.
All right, then. By the way, 312-981-7200. I do have this question. Who besides me, somebody else had to be doing their taxes up until the last minute today. 312-981-7200. Please tell me I wasn't the only one doing their taxes. You can call or text 312-981-7200. More after this on 720 WGN. It's pretty late. It's almost more soulful when you hear the First Marine Division jazz rock combo playing Adele's Hello. We'll hear all of that coming up at midnight. By the way, Craig, I'm guessing from the lack of listeners calling at 312-981-7200, was I the only person filing all their taxes today?
I believe a lot of people were under the impression that the 15th, since it fell on a Friday, was tax day.
Yeah, I don't know why they extended it until today,
yeah.
But today was actually tax day.
Because right. It was a...
Some sort
of
holiday?
No, it was Friday.
There was a holiday, though, or something.
There was something about it
right.
That they were
they've
cool
been doing,
about it.
They've been doing this the last few years where they're like, it's not really on the 15th. It might be on the 18th. So I actually, I was working on them all weekend, but there was one or two, maybe four forms that I still needed. I had all my, for the first time in my entire career, I've been a stand-up comic, an independent contractor for more than 15 years, which means... Everywhere I work around the country, let's say I work 30 clubs, if I work 40 clubs, I had to manually enter every employer identification number and every amount that I had earned at every club everywhere. And this year were the fewest. I had Zanies Comedy Clubs. I had done a performance at Harper College. It was great. I had six. That was all I had, my 1099 miscellaneous. I had six of them, plus my employment here and one other piece of paperwork. My husband... who has an estate now because,
yep.
Okay, here's what I noticed when I was filling everything out. What a weird and horrible reminder your tax forms are that something tragic has happened in your life in the last year, right? Because it will ask you, you know, your name, your spouse's name, and then it will ask, has Patty died this year? Has Stephen died this year? What a horror. I mean, I can't even imagine once I get past that part, I don't even know how I finish my paperwork. How do you not hand it over to someone else and you go, you know what? I don't want to do this.
That should be the very last question if it has to be asked. You have to build to that.
There's got
to
be a better way to handle that. Right. We had a listener last year call in and say it changed the way they, you know, had to put all their paperwork in. Mm-hmm. I wish there was a better way to handle.
Right, and I don't know TurboTax that well. I don't want to open up that fast. I want to, you know. By the way, the reason that it was the 18th this year was Emancipation Day. That fell on the 16th, but it was observed on the 15th, which meant tax day was the 18th.
Well, now we know.
There you
go. Did you know that? I didn't know that. Perfect. That's a great. Was that a texter or did you Google that? I was hoping that a listener had chimed in with that. So, Esmeralda, do you use any tax software?
I used this new. Because I did a voiceover gig of a total of $40. And I was like, I should probably claim this or something.
Nice. She's cleaning up with that.
I know.
If it's less than $300, you don't have to do anything.
No, you don't have to claim that on your taxes.
Yeah,
no.
You could have
Well, I did because I was frightened.
Okay.
And also, if you have any expenses that might even surpass the $40, that counts.
No.
Like for gargling with salt water?
Yeah, okay. Should the shoes that I had to walk over to a microphone. No, so I didn't know what to do, and TurboTax was being weird about it and wanting to charge me the 50-some. And I'm like, no, come on, man. Mm-hmm. And so I used this one called Free Tax USA or something like that. A friend of mine recommended it.
Okay.
And I was able to do my federal free. So and it was easy. It was the same kind of deal, except they let you do anything, any of the... You know, it's not...
Craig and I just went... We just tilted our heads like dogs in a fan.
What?
Well, no, it's free in the sense that, you know, if you have anything... Because, like I said, TurboTax was trying to charge me $50 because for the premium services of using others, like the schedule, whatever this.
I paid for that.
Whatever that. Yeah, well, this one you didn't have to.
That's interesting. I wish I knew about that.
Well, sorry.
TurboTax gets $50 from me every year.
Yeah, no.
Now, mm-hmm. I do H&R Block. Software, and I had read some reviews that people didn't like it. I'm like, it's always been the same, and I was going through and it felt fine, and then I was having trouble. I couldn't scroll through, and it wouldn't like let me make adjustments. It wouldn't let me make any contributions if I wanted to make something for retirement, and it was like, well, you didn't make enough as a self-employed individual. You can't put anything away towards retirement, but I also earned something as a full-time employee. So I was having a lot. So it kept giving me. So when I submitted my taxes today, it actually had like one of those things that says, you know, no worry about a audit. And then it says you have some risk of an audit. And then there's red. I was in yellow. I don't like sending off my tax forms.
No, yellow's bad. That's a bad color.
It was terrible. But all the reasons that it said I might have an audit, I didn't have any of those reasons. It was like, if you have a business between $200,000 and $1 million, I do not have that. If you've claimed more of your AGI, which is your adjusted gross income, and it was Rob Martier. When did you complete your taxes, sir?
This is one of the few aspects of my life that I'm actually on top of.
Ooh,
we get ours done early.
Are you a New Year's Day tax filer?
As soon as we get all the information in, it goes right to our accountant. So we've had our taxes. Actually, we were a little bit later this year, but we've had our taxes done for, at least a month.
Okay. I can't talk to you anymore.
I know. Don, I'm sorry.
Don just called in. He couldn't stand the line, but he said that the IRS was supposed to put out a way for all of us to file for free, and they didn't do it. Does anyone remember that story? The IRS was supposed to build their own way to do it for free.
It is for free if you do it manually and you just send in a check. How is that not free?
Well, it's also free.
Some sort of online.
Well, not like TurboTax and all those. It's free if you have the simplest of simplest
forms.
Taxes.
They even make me spend another $20 to protect against auditing. They're like, get the audit plan.
See, I kind of feel like, I don't know. I don't have enough stuff for them. If they do audit me, I'd be like, here. Because I don't know what you're going to audit me from.
That's how I feel. So I have a lot of expenses when it comes to traveling and trying to sell my show last year. So I have this huge box of receipts that are not sorted by travel or whatever the expenses were, whether it was research and all these things. It's just a big box of receipts. And Steve goes, so what's your plan there? Just hand it over and go, good luck, boys. I don't want an audit, But I mean, like a tiny part of me is curious as to like what happens with this. I mean, I'm sure that I should have them cataloged and itemized and explanatory.
You should get that thing that
scans them.
Yeah, and then it reads all the info.
I ordered a couple things after this. I want to know, this is my next question, and I know we have guests coming in at 11:30. Maybe at some point, text us. Did this year's taxes, did the whole process, the whole rigmarole, did it make you think, I'm going to be so much better at doing this this year? Are you, anybody? Anyone just on the show? Well, Rob, you're already ahead of the game. I don't know when you arrived at that behavior, that upper, is that?
You know, again, this is an anomaly in my life. When I, no, honestly, when I started making money and getting, you know, my dad said, look, the sooner you get these things done, the better off you're going to be. And I've always been like that. So
I was pulling on my receipts going, I remember in first grade when I used to shove my homework in the back of my desk. This feels similar. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Hey, Craig, do you remember when I was telling you about watching? I've been binge watching something, actually, in a very unique way. I was borrowing some equipment from friends of ours at the Verizon.
Some really cool equipment.
I was using the Oculus.
Were binge watching Orange is the New Black.
Which is a weird way to watch it. I don't know if you want to watch.
Amazing.
I don't know if you want to be in prison in virtual reality. It's sort of a strange
thing.
That's
a good point, yeah.
Joining me in studio are Abby and Sonia, who are our favorite people. I don't know if there are other people that we might like at the Verizon store on Michigan Avenue. But you guys always bring us some fun stuff, and you always have great stories to tell us and important messages for folks as well. But tell me a little bit about Oculus, because I know people are really curious about this or seeing more news about it. There are press conferences. There are even like conversations about privacy and things like that. But can you tell our audience, Sonia, about Oculus?
Yes. So it's a virtual reality. Oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. So it's basically our virtual reality partnered up with Samsung, and it's really easy to use. All you do is connect your phone. Mm-hmm. It's compatible with the new Samsung series, so the S6, S6 Edge, 7, 7 Edge, and the Note 5. All you do is connect your device to the Oculus itself.
And when she says connect, it sort of slides
like
into the
like
slot.
In the charging port.
Exactly.
You just almost like you're charging it. And then as soon as you connect it, the app automatically opens up, and it just like opens up this whole virtual reality world. There's all these different applications, and like you just mentioned, Netflix. Mm-hmm. So you could do a lot of things almost like very 3D, very, very virtual reality.
Abby, have you spent some time using the Oculus?
I have spent some time.
Come closer to your microphone.
Yeah.
You have a beautiful voice. We want to hear
it.
Oh,
geez, I know I'm quiet.
When the first time you popped it in, what was your reaction to using Oculus?
It was pretty crazy. I didn't think it would be as real life as it was.
What? And I've mentioned the Netflix application. It's just the one because I've been, it's just where I like watching a lot of shows, and sometimes when I get home from work, I want to sit back and relax, and I end up being in this ski lodge on the side of a mountain. What apps have you been using on your Oculus?
I like the ones where you can actually walk around places.
How do you walk around places? Because I that's the thing, is you can't actually move around, obviously. But
well, no,
you can't move your body.
You can look up, you can look down,
and then
turn around,
and that generates movement. Okay.
Yeah. So it's almost like just the whole 360 view of it. I have my son using like Star Wars apps or like the Jurassic World. Mm-hmm. So it's like as soon as you put them on, you're in the forest. There's like a big T-Rex right there. It's really surreal.
How old is your son?
7.
Because when my son first put it on, when Griffin first put the headgear on, so it is a sort of, it actually, when you mention Star Wars, it looks a little bit without the helmet, but the sort of the eye gear of a rebel pilot.
Mm-hmm.
When Griffin first put it on, he was so freaked out. He started reaching out for stuff. Is that what your son was doing too?
Yeah. I actually had one of my customers, she tried it on for the first time. And I always show the Jurassic World one just because it feels so real. Mm-hmm. She screams.
Oh, she
like,
did?
She just like, because she felt like there was like a T-Rex just coming at her. She was just like, she screamed.
It is pretty intense. So Abby, what has been, like she mentioned, what is the response of customers who come in and try out things like the Oculus?
They love it. It's definitely a different experience that they have not, used or seen before. It's something new that's getting pretty popular, but they love it. They will put it on. Their first reaction is like, oh my gosh, they'll say it out loud. And then they start going up and down and ducking and It's been a really fun experience at the store.
Well, when you guys contacted me, you were one of the elements that really drew me to it is the idea that maybe if people are afraid of something, maybe they're afraid of flying. There are ways to sort of simulate that and have that experience. Have you had a chance to work with anybody who has a phobia of some sort?
I haven't personally worked with one, but I know that there are different programs out there, like you mentioned. So even if you're afraid of heights, just afraid of
public speaking,
things like that. Yeah.
Really?
There's a public speaking one. Yeah.
And what about the gaming? I can't really wrap my mind around how I would do game because that's so intense.
Well, there's buttons on the side of it, but I think they're coming out with almost a remote control mm-hmm. that's going to be related to it. Try the, what's it called? The Temple Run. Have you ever tried Temple Run?
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. So it's, you're in the game.
Can we actually run?
Yeah. You're not running yourself.
Is there how much is a Temple Run? Is that a cost?
There's a free version.
There's a free version.
Yeah.
Can we do it on my phone? Cause I have an Oculus during the break. Maybe I can hook up. I didn't have a chance to bring this back in for Craig to try out, but I have now. Do you have to take your case off of the phone to pop it in that?
No.
All right, so let's see if we can get Craig into the...
Get me in there.
Hold on a second. Here, hand me the Oculus, and I'll start setting it up for him. And then, but here's the thing. The whole next segment will just be Craig trying to figure out... It's just doing the tutorial. Can you explain a little bit about the tutorial, whoever feels more comfortable?
Yeah, so there is a small tutorial, but it actually does help you because it just helps you navigate through the Oculus itself. Mm-hmm. So like I mentioned, there's soft key buttons on the side of the goggles. Mm-hmm. It's like a touchpad, if you will. So, you know, you can go up, down, left, right, how to select, how to go back. So it does walk you. It's really, really, really easy to go through it.
The amount that it's necessary from 1 to 10, because I have used zero tutorials in my life.
Actually, for this one, I'm the same way as you. I just kind of skip through everything, skip.
And that's how my son was. He wanted to skip it. I'm like, just sit through the tutorial.
I did skip it the first time, and I was like, no, let's go back. But it takes like less than a minute to go through it. It's just kind of walking you through how to run.
I only have a 5, so it'd have to be with the other one.
We'll set up the other one.
I thought I had a 6. I don't have a 6. I have a 5.
That's okay.
I'm sorry, Craig.
Craig really wants
to try a temple run.
Well, doesn't it also connect to like Xbox?
Oh, can we do it on your phone?
Yeah.
We hook that up for him here. Here's the Oculus.
Oh, sweet guy.
Yeah, are there ways to set it up to hook these up to
one
home
of these,
gaming
one of these
systems?
One works with home gaming systems. I don't know if it's this one or the other one, but not one that they made.
Well, the Oculus, this one specifically is for the Samsung devices, whether it's the 6, the Edge 7, the S7, and the Note 5.
Got it.
Look at that. See, I retain information. Well, yeah. No, I got very... The Edge 7, I was using that. So what are the elements of that newer phone that kind of... It has a wraparound screen. Can you tell us how are people reacting to the idea of that technology?
They had it in their S6 series as well, but mm-hmm. people are loving it. You get the whole screen. Mm-hmm. So when you are watching your TV shows, Netflix, YouTube videos... there's no gap on the sides.
Right.
So people are loving that. And then it has that extra task edge bar.
Oh, that slides over.
Yes.
And you can slide through a bunch of different elements of that, too.
Yes. So you're quick. You can see all your text messages from the side if you want to go to that really quick. If you want to view any contacts, mm-hmm. Just quick contact calls from the edge and then viewing your calendar. There's so many different options for that side.
Again, this is a phone they let me borrow, and I was having so much fun playing with the different elements. I would say compare, because I've been a Samsung owner for probably 6 years. All my phones have been Samsungs. I like the 5. I love the Note, but I would say that the Edge 7 has been a lot of fun, especially using the different – it's just – oh – the camera.
I was just going to say, I was waiting on it. I was waiting for that.
I was going to ask you how you liked it compared to the other one.
It's the editing function of the Edge 7 that I really enjoyed because, Craig, I don't know if you can notice a difference in the photos that I've been taking. Like the one that we took in the producer's booth. So there's something where I can highlight each one of our faces then I can do soften. But I can also do bigger eyes.
Okay.
There's a couple of my selfies in the last few weeks. If you look at them, I look pretty cartoonish.
Right. No, I looked adorable in the picture. So thank you so much for that.
Well, also, because here's the other thing. What's your favorite thing on that, Sonia?
The selfie.
Not just a selfie, but skinny face.
Oh, skinny face.
Skinny face. It does skinny face.
Yeah, that was great. I thought I lost weight when I saw that photo.
Wait, you did.
Oh, good.
You absolutely
cool.
did.
Good.
And now we.
I'm not going to go to the gym anymore.
And now we have Philly's Best coming tonight. I won't have skinny face anymore, but we'll have Philly's Best. More with our friends from Verizon on 720 WGN. It's pretty late. You're listening pretty late. Now, Craig, I will let the music play longer, but I really need you to get back into Temple Run. Craig has right now. If you go to WGNradio.com to our live stream, you can watch Craig in the producer's booth. He has an Oculus strapped to his head. And go ahead, Craig, you have to tell us what's going on. Oh, you have to have the headphones. Yeah. You okay, so you're hearing me, but also you're Uh-oh. In a virtual reality.
Yep, I just took the thing. Now I got to start running. Run for my life. No. Okay.
Not okay.
They ate me already.
Oh, is it game over?
Yeah, they just. Yes, it looks like it. I'm in somebody's teeth.
Okay, so how does he reset the game? So does he have to?
Yes, it's. Yeah.
So tap on the side. Yeah. So look at the thing that you want. This is great radio, by the way.
I'm not going to do the tutorial. This is you know what's really cool about this is everywhere you look, you're inside like the game.
Something. Yeah.
So there's just background that I didn't even see when I played it on my phone. That I'm now just within that world.
I want to show him Netflix because I love that lodge.
Yes.
I just hang out on that red couch with my hot cocoa.
So what happens when you're watching TV and you look behind? Does it follow you?
Yeah, you can actually look behind you. You can look behind you. If you look up, it says Theater Void, which is weird. Have you seen that, Sonia?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the chandelier above you in the ski lodge says Theater Void, but you can look behind you.
Maybe.
There's
a Was it meant to
bedroom.
Look up?
Yeah, you're supposed to look up. There's nothing.
There's nothing to look up.
Telling you nothing's here. Yeah. Is there anything? I want to make sure we don't miss anything that's going on at the store at Verizon on Michigan Avenue. Tell us a little bit about what's going on that's new. Oh. It's just the virtual reality.
They're having
so
a lot
many
of fun
things.
With it.
Yeah, we've actually been going outside with the virtual reality
How?
During the days. So we'll just take it outside and then we'll let the guests, anybody walking by, can
But
take
you
a
have
chance.
To have them sit down, right?
No, they can stand.
It's got to throw some people.
Yeah, absolutely.
It might throw you off. Absolutely,
when you're not used to it, it'll throw you off a little bit. But it's so fun. We've been taking selfies out there with them and. They've been loving the experience. So
well, they were asking me what Declan thought of it. My son, who has special needs, we put it on his head, and it's weird because Declan doesn't like having headphones. He doesn't like anything that's sort of like put on him
mm-hmm.
Until he knows what it is. So we put it on him, and he just kind of sat there and didn't move. And he didn't try to take it off, which we were surprised by. And then Griffin really wanted it back. His they're brothers.
Yeah.
They're going to compete for stuff.
Yeah.
So Griffin like took it back from him, and Declan like. Without he didn't not violently or anything, just kind of like reached out and just reached for it, and it was so sweet that we were like, all right, what do you want to do? He loves anything with water, so there's a lot of water features.
Yeah.
You can go through these galleries. There's one where it's the like the Museum of Modern Art, the MoMA,
mm-hmm.
in New York, and it's kind of like you're gliding through the museum and going through the different rooms of it's really beautiful.
Yeah, I've seen even just like the deep the deep diving or just going into the ocean. Those are nice too, because when you look up, it's nothing but water. Water. You look down, it's really dark.
I feel like I spent most of my time watching Orange is the New Black on my virtual. Just because, okay, so here's the thing about my house. It's very small and there's a lot of clutter, right? There's not a single space that isn't covered with laundry or crumbs or homework or paperwork.
Sounds like my house.
So when I'm sitting in the Netflix lodge, I'm like, this, I mean, it's a huge, wide open space. There's just the furniture and beautiful hardwood. It's a lodge, and I can't hang out there.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It kind of takes you away a little bit.
It does. What do people tell you, like, when they take it off? There is kind of I have a little bit of separation anxiety.
There is a little bit, yeah. I know when I take them off, it kind of, like, puts me back into real world, which mm-hmm. is weird because I'm already in real world. But, I do have my customers. They take it off, and they're just like, oh, is there another one you can show
it's
me?
It's sort of a letdown. Oh, I'm back here. How you doing, Craig? It's really fun watching you just what are you looking at now? Tell us what you see, Craig. Wait, put your goggles back on.
No, I can't even tell where the microphone is when I put my goggles on. So I'm running from the bad guys, and they keep eating me fairly quickly. But I see their giant teeth as they attack me.
Oh, no.
No, it's awesome.
All right.
It's so cool.
I'll have to show him how to go forward. I don't think he's gone forward in the game yet.
I went forward once, but then I couldn't do the side to side. I was trying to just lean. I probably look drunk for a minute. Here.
No, you look exactly. Well, because when Griffin has the virtual, he has the Oculus on, he tries to get up. He wants to move. Because are there ways to move yourself around? You have to use the side panel.
Yeah, for the technology, it is, you have to use the side soft buttons.
There has to be a point where they're going to have.
I'm sure there will be. I'm where sure. It's just
wearable. You have to have wearable devices so that it's monitored within the device. Oh, yeah. So that you can reach for something. Because in the Netflix room, I keep wanting to reach. They have.
I did Netflix.
I didn't try the Netflix room. I have to try the Netflix room.
Before you go, you should. Well, you have access to it all the time. I'll come to this. I'll bring Griffin with this week. He has spring break, so we'll come hang out. What are the other? What other sort of ideas? What are people reacting to the most when it comes to the virtual reality?
They just want to like. They just grab their hands out, or they just reach their hands out just to touch something. I don't know what it is. That's just like the natural instinct. As soon as you put them on, your hands go out.
When you guys how old is the Oculus? It's only been like in the last month or two, isn't it?
Yeah, that's not even
And the price people like because we were thinking about it. It's not that expensive, is it?
No,
it's $100 for the headpiece.
Yeah, $99.99.
How do you make sure that you keep the goggles clean? Do you have to use? Do you know about that? Like keeping it clean?
No. You can
when you have kids
much,
to get their hands on them. Sorry about that.
It does smudge a little bit, but. I would just use any cleaning
that you use for like your glasses.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just like a soft cloth. Yeah.
Yep.
How you doing, Craig? Hey, Craig. For blurriness, if it's not sharp enough, there's also yes.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Tell me. I get eaten a lot.
Oh.
It's kind of cool though, actually. Like the experience of actually having something jump at you in a game. You know, dying kind of stinks, but for some reason in the Oculus, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, no, I definitely enjoyed. I didn't do any of the games. I feel like I should have done more of the games.
Yeah, you really should have done more of these games.
I liked all the gliding stuff, like where I was at a beach or I was in the forest and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Those are my favorite, too.
I use it more for relaxing and kicking back a little bit. And again, if you have, there are certain accounts that you can watch some TV shows, and it's huge. It's not like, it's not virtual reality where you're in the shows, but it's on a huge screen compared to whatever you're watching.
Right.
And the picture quality is just amazing.
Amazing,
it's been so much fun to play with. And you also get, by the way, you can turn off updates, right? So that you don't get like, so-and-so liked your photo.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't come
through. It's still coming from your phone. You're absolutely right. So it pops turn off the updates.
No.
It's so weird. It like floats across your screen. Did you guys have any reaction earlier this week when the owners, like the CEO of AMC, said that he was going to allow texting in some of the theaters? Did you guys see that at all?
I did see that. I don't think I like that. I don't know.
I know as you know, the folks that work with cell phones, and we know that we have access to the technology. Do you know a day later, because of the response he got in social media, he's like, no, we won't do that. We've heard you.
I did see that, though, and I didn't. It's like, well, okay.
Yeah, I mean, because when you go out, to you, Sonia, what to you does it mean to have a personal device? What for you personally?
To have a personal device?
Yeah, to have your cell phone.
It's just a way to keep in contact, making sure that I'm able to stay in touch with my son, my family, my friends, just to be connected.
Right.
And there's sometimes it's okay to be disconnected.
Exactly. How about you, Abby?
The exact same. You know, you'd want to be able to... You know, I freak out when I go to a different room without my phone. You know, I'm so attached to it. But, you know, just living downtown and not being from Chicago, like using the maps, like I would.
Oh, getting around.
I would, yeah. I would
and what's nearby.
Not make it very far.
But when you're in a movie theater, you are where you need to be.
Yes, yep. I absolutely agree that it should not be
when you're at dinner, when you're with your family, when you're spending time with the people you love, where you need to be. Turn it off. Except for Craig, who is being eaten by monsters. More after this on 720 WGN.
Thank you.
I feel like I should have all of you applaud for yourselves because through the magic of radio and having to record this earlier, I just had to sit down with all of the musicians from the 1st Marine Division jazz rock combo. And I think my favorite was watching you, Aaron. No, Jules. Jules on saxophone.
That's right.
Kind of just sort of hear the music sort of fade out a little bit. What's that like hearing just the last part of Hello that you played for us earlier?
Well, it reminds me, well, I don't know. I was just...
Just hearing it. How did it feel to hear it?
Oh, it. Well, I don't know.
I hope you feel proud because you guys sounded amazing.
Yeah. Well, I think we are, and I don't know. I just we've been rehearsing this music for upwards of 3 weeks or so. So it's like ingrained in your head by this point, and right. You just start to get on tour, and it's like I don't want to hear it anymore. Oh, there's part of you that doesn't want to hear it anymore, and there's part of you that is proud of it. So
well, and also to hear what it is you want from it too. Did you hear what you wanted from it?
Oh yeah,
you sounded fantastic.
Thank you very
much.
Well,
you have the role in that song of Hello, Adele's Hello of the voice, really.
Correct, yeah.
And what has been the response when you play that for people? Is this the first time you're playing live this week in Chicago, or have you been performing this?
No, we played one this morning, but we've been playing for our. Fellow musicians back at Pendleton, and one comment I got was that I need to channel the inner Adele, my inner Adele. So, someone said I should get some makeup.
Is that what you want? Some good eyeliner.
Yeah.
Who's going to help you out with the eyeliner?
Hopefully no one will have to.
Do you want to help him with the eyeliner?
I could do that.
I have to make sure. Julia.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, any of you are probably, you know, theatrical, perhaps. You've tried on some makeup before. Have you tried on makeup before, Jules?
I'm going to refuse to answer that question.
I'm teasing you. Julia, do you feel like he has to get in touch with his inner Adele?
Yes, I think so. He should definitely let me do his makeup.
Oh, I like the idea. I think a Marine in makeup might be a stretch. Mike, how's it going over there in the corner behind the drums?
It's going well.
You're not Mike.
I am not.
You're hold on a second. Let me get all the names right. We have Mike on bass.
Yeah, down here.
I have so many scratch notes on my piece of paper here.
That is Aaron out there.
It's Aaron out there on the drums. Yeah. All the way back in the corner.
I was content to be Mike today.
You weren't even going to correct me. That was very nice.
I was
going
to play with it.
And let's go back because I've already addressed you by your first names as you introduced me to yourselves. But let's go around and find out what your ranks are and how you'd like to be addressed.
Okay. Well, I am Staff Sergeant Aaron Parks, and I'm the drummer. So,
Staff Sergeant?
Yes.
And you have the guns, and I can't remember all the stripes. Sergeant Paraka taught me everything, and now everything's falling out of my head.
Three up and one down.
Three up and one down.
Yes.
All right.
Crossed rifles in the center.
I knew there were rifles. That's all I remember. Okay. Staff Sergeant Aaron. I got to write all this down. I'm not going to be able to remember all of it. Okay. So we have Aaron Parks on the, Staff Sergeant Aaron Parks on the drums.
Yes.
And your name over on the bass?
Down here on bass, I am Sergeant Michael Barnett, and I usually go by Barney.
Barney.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's not Sergeant Barney, then that would be weird.
That's cool, you know, so you got to get my permission first, but tonight I'll allow it.
I'm not going to call you Sergeant Barney. I don't have it in me.
Oh, okay.
Do you want me to?
Sure, yeah.
Sergeant Barney.
The third time you've done it, just to let you know.
Sergeant Barney.
That is now the fourth time. Yep.
All right, let's see how much trouble I can get in tonight.
Okay.
And on guitar?
Corporal Julia Taper.
Corporal Julia Taper. And any nicknames for you?
No, yeah. He took mine. It was once Jules, but.
Aww. All right then. Is there another nickname that you'd like that you want to start right now? Does anybody have a nickname for her that? Let's be nice.
I like JT.
Yeah, I thought we were calling her JT.
Yeah.
Corporal JT.
Yeah.
Should we give her back?
She doesn't
Jules?
Seem impressed.
If she wants Jules, she is a Julia. She kind of deserves it.
I think that it's kind of the function of the Pretty Late Show to break all the Marines' rules.
Yeah. Okay. It's one of
and
those
any
moments.
Sort of pre-existing relationships. Yes.
You know where like the one player joins a team and somebody already has his number, but you kind of have to tell him, okay, here you get your number. I feel like Julia gets Jules.
I think Corporal Jules.
Corporal Jules.
Oh, look at our sax player. He is
okay. Well, let's come to this concession. Since we're talking about this, let me go next. I'm Sergeant Justin Daniel, but I go by Jules. So she can have Jules, but can I have the Jules?
Ooh, interesting.
That's confusing.
Nice. Or what if we give you Jules, like it's a Z on the end?
I'm cool with that.
I'm sorry. It was Sergeant Justin
Daniel.
Would
Daniel.
It be weird if people called you Sergeant the Jules?
Sergeant the Jewels.
That might be a little weird, but I'm willing to roll on the late show.
I know. It does kind of have connotations
Sergeant
of other
Jewels.
Things. And on keyboard.
Yes, I'm Corporal Victor Iannoli.
Let me get this right. Corporal Victor Iannoli.
Yes.
All right. And any nicknames for you?
I can go by Vic, Victor.
Mostly people just butcher his name, and so we just call him Vic Linelli. We
just call it good. Yeah. Nice. I go by a lot of things, so it's appropriate is probably Vic. Yeah. Victor.
So is what you do when you go around the country is just tease each other endlessly? A little bit. Well, you have to. You have to have a good time. Yeah. How long, as a staff sergeant, how long have you been working together as a band?
This group in particular? Mm-hmm. We have been, this is actually our first tour as this group. We've been in the same band for probably just about a year, because Corporal Tabor is the newest one. She's our newest addition to this this unit. But I think we've been together for about a year.
Okay, for about a year. You guys sound amazing. So as the newest, when did you join Corporal Tabor?
I joined October 14, 2014.
Oh, so that's not that long ago.
No, not at all.
All right. And how now? You're in town for Chicago. Where did you play this morning? You said you already performed?
College of DuPage.
Oh, you were out at COD.
Yes.
Wonderful. How did that go?
It was a good time. It was an interesting crowd. They really dug what we did. It was a good, healthy mix of young and old people and some people just passing through and like,
some
there's a band playing.
Yeah.
Some people passed out? How early were you playing?
Noon.
That's college students. Plus you have commuter students, maybe some people who are going back to school. Maybe they have kids. You don't know. It's a Monday, so it's a long day. We're going to take a quick break. We are hanging out with the 1st Marine Division Jazz Rock Combo. The name seems to change also, but we're going with that one now?
Yeah, we'll go with that today,
right.
I guess.
All right, for just right now. More after this on 720 WGN. Beyond thrilled to have with us in the studio the 1st Marine Division Jazz Rock Combo. These are musicians that play all over the world. They are Marines. They've gone through boot camp, and we are more than fortunate to have them with us tonight. Here they are playing John Mayer's Waiting on the World to Change.
Thank you.
seriously, again, will you clap? You don't want to clap for yourselves. That'd be weird, wouldn't it? Yeah. Clap for each other. How's that?
That was amazing.
That was
amazing.
So good. Yay. We, through the magic of radio and the graciousness of our guests, we have the first Marine Division jazz rock combo in studio with us, and we have pre-recorded their songs and then are interviewing them. So we're forcing them to listen to a little bit of their music. Do you feel like you're being forced, everybody, a little bit? Mm-hmm. No?
Well, we won't answer that.
I see, look, and you're also a little self-conscious about the way you sound. Who was the one that said they were never going to speak again after listening to
this? That was me.
Why don't you like the sound of your voice?
It's just weird.
It's just weird? Mm-hmm. All right, let me reintroduce all of our guests, because now I've written it down, and everyone can correct me if I'm wrong about this. We have Staff Sergeant Aaron Parks on drums.
Yes.
We have Sergeant Justin Daniel the Jules on sax.
Here, yeah.
Do you like Sergeant the Jules?
Yeah, that sounds great.
It was Jules before. We've decided it's
Sergeant
not going to stick.
Sergeant the Jules. That works. Jules.
That's it.
That works.
That's how it's going to go.
If I can retain Jules, I'll take it.
I know. This is. I feel like I.
Would it be better if it was Duh Jules?
Oh, Duh Jules. Now that you're in Chicago.
I'm not a Bears fan, though. So.
Hey, now. You are right now. You're a Bears fan for the next few minutes.
It's okay. You don't
go Seahawks.
You don't have to be. Wait, what just happened?
I don't know what just happened.
I don't know, but let's finish introducing our guests before we come back around to that. We also have with us Sergeant Michael Barnett on bass.
Yes.
Sergeant Barney to others.
Yep.
Not to me. I can't do it. It's not time yet.
You can call me Mike.
All right. Hi, Mike. Hi. And we also have Corporal Julia Tapper, who prefers to go by Jules because it was stolen from her. She's on guitar. And we also have, do I have everybody? No, I'm missing the, why don't I have the keyboard? I don't know why I didn't write down the keyboard, sweetie.
Oh, my. Well, this is awkward.
It is. It's very awkward. Wait, I have, why did it say nope? I'm sorry. You have to leave.
You're not on the interview.
I'm still getting paid, though.
I know. You are. Victor Ioni.
Ionelli?
I had it right the first time, didn't I? I should go back and just take it off and pretend like I got it right. Can you fix that in post?
Yeah, sure.
Recording
no
the
problem.
Whole thing anyway?
Yeah, that's fine.
We have a sergeant. We have Corporal Victor Ionelli. No. Say
yes.
It again.
Ionelli.
Ionelli. See, my name is Vasquez, and I always correct people. So do you ever let people get away with saying it incorrectly?
Yeah, if their rank is high enough.
Sure. Oh, there you go. Yeah. I could see that completely. Okay, so let's take a step back. So not a Bears fan, but a Seahawks fan.
Yeah, I'm from Seattle, so.
All right.
Well, I'm from the Seattle area.
We've talked about this off the air. You can tell us, like, the exact part. People all over the country can hear our show. They might know where exactly you're from.
Yeah,
the suburb or the surrounding area.
Well, I'm from a town called Puyallup, Washington.
Puyallup?
Yeah.
My favorite.
Craig
Love
knows
that.
Exactly
Love
where
that
it
area.
Is.
Yeah, it's great.
It's beautiful. And what has been your experience as a Marine? Was this something that you had thought of when you were a child, or how did this opportunity come up? Yes.
Well, for me, I have two brothers, and my younger brother joined the Army, and I remember going out to see his boot camp graduation, and when I saw all the people, I was like, I'm never going to do this, because I thought that they were brainwashed, and that's what it seemed like at the time. I was going to music school before that, so when I got too much in debt and wanted a job in music, performing, I was like, my older brother's in the Air Force, so I'm the middle child, and so I was like, you know, these guys might not have the worst idea, so that's when I went to the recruiters, and I had to outdo them.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's why you went Marines. Yeah, I was trying to figure out how you went from there being brainwashed to, I'm going to go to the hardest, the most elite branch of the military.
That's right.
And become a Marine. So when you found out about the musicians program, what drew you to that? Because it sounds like it's a great program, and you are trained as a Marine, correct?
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest things for me was, I was going to music school, so I already knew how to play my axe. I wanted to get a paycheck, and I wanted to not pay for any of my bills besides, you know, getting my student loans paid off. So that was attractive. But at the same time, I wanted to make it so I could get paid and go to school. And so that's when the Marine Corps has, you know, programs within it where you can take school for free. So that was kind of the biggest allure for me.
And do you also now have bragging rights over your brothers in the Air Force and the Army?
Oh, totally, yeah. Being in the Marine Corps, yeah.
A little bit, just a little bit. And Corporal Victor Ionelli.
Yes, ma'am.
See how I did that? Did I come back around and get it right?
Yes.
And where are you from originally?
I'm from Coral Springs, Florida.
And so did you train in North Carolina or South Carolina, or did you train at San Diego?
Yes, because I was located on the East Coast, we go to Parris Island in South Carolina for our boot camp.
And does it make a difference coming in as a musician? You know, do other people in your platoon when you're training know that you're coming in as a musician, or is everyone treated the same?
They find out.
They do?
In a few months. And our drill instructors don't like us, typically, because we promote a little faster than the other MOSs in the field.
Well, but that's after you you go through training, correct?
Yes.
So not during. Everyone's an equal when it comes to boot camp.
Correct, correct.
And what brought you to the Marines?
Well, growing up, I never gave the military any thought, really. I kind of just didn't want to follow my friends. They were, you know, came time to write college essays and everything, and they were looking at University of Florida or Florida State, and I just didn't want to pay for classes that I would end up skipping or, you know, falling asleep in.
Right.
And I just wanted a challenge, and the recruiter came in. It could have been any branch for me, honestly, but the Marine Corps was the only recruiter that came in, popped in a DVD, showed Marines kicking butt, you know, while maintaining skills as a musician. And for me, you know, I don't know if I'm the best to be put on the front lines, but I can contribute and I can serve in the capacity that best suits me, which is behind a piano. You know, I can play for celebrities and officers and high enlisted.
And represent the Marine Corps proudly.
Absolutely. And wear the beautiful uniform, you know.
You guys have been doing a great job so far. We also have with us a Corporal Julia Tapper, who's on the guitar. Where are you from originally?
I am from the northwest suburbs of Chicago. I can't lie, so.
You can absolutely tell us what suburb, because they're listening.
Yes. I'm from Algonquin, Illinois.
Algonquin.
Yes.
And I heard you talking earlier about having pizza in town. What is your favorite pizza, first of all? Just before we get to the rest of the important stuff.
The deep dish from Giordano's.
Why Giordano? I'm not getting the Giordano's thing. We're going to have to take you to Lou Malnati's as soon as possible. Okay. Can you edit it out?
Loves it so much. They're a sponsor on this fine program. We love Lou Malnati's.
So growing up in Algonquin as a fan of Giordano's, that's okay. What musical instrument did you play first?
I always played guitar.
Always?
Yes. Since I was 8, I picked up a guitar, and my dad taught me at first, and then I started to take lessons, and they were on and off. I was like, you know, maybe I should learn more. Maybe I could just teach myself off the internet.
Oh, really? I just put a couple of YouTube videos on,
yes.
See how I do. So what brought you to the military? Did you think that picking up the guitar, you would be a musician traveling around the world with the Marines?
At first, I joined at a different MOS.
I'm sorry. Can you let us know what an MOS is?
MOS is your occupation in the Marine Corps. So we're all bandsmen.
Okay.
And I was going to be an aviation mechanic.
Sure.
And my recruiter found out that I play guitar. They're like, hey, you're gonna try this audition here. And I was like, okay, sure. And I got the job, and
there you
I'm
are.
Here now.
So your intention was to join the military, and it just so happened that you were skilled as a musician and kind of ended up in that position. That's amazing. We are talking to the 1st Marine Division Jazz Rock Combo. More with our guests when we come back after this. I'm Pretty Little Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. That's Strasburg and St. Denny from the 1st Marine Division Jazz and Rock Combo, and they've been in the studio with us. We have pre-recorded all of their live music earlier because they have a very busy week with performances all over the Chicagoland area. This morning they performed at the College of DuPage, and I wanted to make sure we get to all of our Marines that have joined us. We have Sergeant Michael Barnett on bass. He's offered to let me call him Sergeant Barney, but I just can't do it. How many people actually call you Sergeant Barney?
A lot of people at work. A lot of people I work with.
Friends. Yeah. We'll get there.
Yeah, friends.
Yeah, next time you come through.
Co-workers.
There you go.
Everyone in this room.
Jake, are you calling him Sergeant Barney? No. Sergeant Brock. You don't call him that. See?
I'm bringing the name back.
You're bringing it Barney?
The purple dinosaur kind of ruined it, but it's a cool nickname.
It is a cool nickname. I agree. All right, fine. Sergeant Barney.
Thank you.
I can commit to it since you're worried about the coolness of it. Where are you from originally?
I'm from a small town in California called Templeton. Mm-hmm. It's on the coast right in between San Francisco and Los Angeles.
And what was the first musical instrument that you played?
Actually, I started on the tuba.
On the tuba?
Yeah, I played tuba in school growing up, and I picked up the bass guitar as I was going along, and I actually still play both of those instruments. Just now you saw me playing the bass guitar, mm-hmm. but more often than that, I play the tuba at work.
Oh, do you, so also a part of this group, you are using the tuba in different performances?
Yeah.
All right, then show off with how many people, but just out of curiosity, how many of you are playing more than one instrument with the group? Oh, all of you play different, not just not.
Does the drum set count as more than one instrument? There's like six drums here. I mean, that,
that's true.
I have to play all of mine at the same time.
You got a lot going on over there. Yeah. All right, hold on. We'll get to you.
Okay.
I'll back in the corner. So, Sergeant Barney, what brought you to the military? Was this something that you thought about when you were a child?
No, this actually the option didn't come to me until I was late in my college career. I spent 5 years in college at Fresno State.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated.
What did you study at Fresno State?
Music. I have a degree in music education. And I saw a lot of my friends going out into the world, getting a job as a music educator,
right,
and then having a tough time in these small California Central Valley towns who are getting their arts funding cut. And they're losing their job because of that, not because they're bad educators. And that on top of I wanted to keep playing my instrument out and make money.
And so did you choose the Marines for a particular reason?
They had the best recruiters.
They had the best recruiters. And that's not just because you're here, Sergeant Paraka. What did your family think about that when you told them you were joining the Marines to play music?
They thought it was great.
They did? Oh, good.
Of course, you know, there's always a little bit of hesitation from the parents. But
right.
I was a little bit older, and they trusted my judgment, and they knew that I knew what I was getting into.
Right. And and how long have you been in the Marines?
A little over 5 years.
Okay. And so is it everything? And when you get in, it's kind of daunting. What did you think when you were at boot camp? Did you ever for a moment go, okay, maybe this wasn't quite what I was signing up for?
Yeah, boot camp was a little rough for me. I was overweight when they sent me.
What?
Being in college, you know, a lot of...
They get you in shape
a lot
fast.
Of beer, a lot of partying.
Sure.
But I was technically over my max allowed weight for the Marines when they sent me there, but I lost it quick in boot camp.
Yeah, they aren't messing around when they want to get you in shape.
Yep.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. They take their time, too, to make sure you get where you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have back here, okay, finally, back on drums. Now I have to go through my entire list. We have Staff Sergeant Aaron Parks. And so is this the first instrument you played, were the drums?
Actually, I started on violin. And my mom was a violinist.
Aww.
And she's phenomenal. And she tried. And myself, probably naturally being a drummer at heart, didn't have the attention span to be able to play the violin. So we gave up very quickly. And I discovered drums were the way to go.
Is there a lot more patience, I'm guessing, involved in playing the violin?
Probably, yeah. I didn't stick around long enough to find out, yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I'm from Muskegon, Michigan.
Oh, so they can hear us, by the way.
Oh, wonderful.
We're heard in 38 states in Canada, parts of Mexico.
Oh, awesome.
So I know it seems like you're just in Chicago, and also live streaming on WGNradio.com. So when you guys leave, you can let everybody know to listen to our show. So in Michigan, when you're playing drums, by the way, how thrilled was the violinist mom when you decided on the drums? Because this also means that all the rehearsals have to be at your place.
Well, yeah, and my dad is actually a drummer. They met at a music conservatory, and so... I think my dad kind of felt like, oh, cool, I won one over to my side.
Sure, and, in that battle.
Yeah, but I think she was fine with it because she was used to my dad practicing, and so I don't think it was a big deal for me to be practicing. So.
And did you go into the Marines after high school, or did you also spend time at
college? I went immediately after high school. I actually randomly got a phone call from a recruiter when I was thinking about colleges and auditioning and stuff. And I got a random phone call from a recruiter said, hey, I heard you're thinking about joining the Marine Corps band.
Did you wonder like how they got your number? You're like, wait a
minute. I hadn't even talked to anybody about it. And so I was wondering, I had an amazing recruiter. And
where were you playing that you got the attention of the Marines?
I
mean, that's pretty intense.
I think I had a friend that joined the Marine Corps that just kind of dimed me out, probably. I started, the more I thought about it, though, he kind of planted the seed, and I thought about it. And I was like, you know, that's a steady gig, and I don't have to pay for college and get in college debt, and, you know, and they feed me, and they house me. So.
And the uniforms look amazing.
Yeah, you know, I was like, well, I could join the Navy. Nah, I'm not going to join the Navy. I'm going to join the Marine Corps.
I mean, we have respect for the Navy. Not as, you know, I mean, you probably have less respect for the Navy, just out of jest. Just out of making fun of them. But what did the family think about you joining the Marines?
They were okay with it. They were a little worried at first. But, you know, I think... I had a great recruiter that was very good at kind of telling them what to expect. He had actually recruited another bandsman before me. And so they kind of knew what I was getting into.
Sure.
And they asked a lot of the right questions.
And you were telling me earlier that you were at the San Diego, at the Marine Corps Recruit Depot for 2 years?
3 years.
3 years.
Yes.
And so you played a lot of the graduations, the morning when they post, they raise the flags, and when they lower the flags.
Yep, every Friday.
And how is your sort of your world changed, kind of leaving San Diego and getting a chance to travel with the band?
It's been a great experience. I mean, you know, I've gotten to travel with just the Marine Corps band in general. I've gotten to travel to New York City, where we reopened up the crown of the Statue of Liberty because it had been closed since September 11th.
That had to be amazing.
I've played a lot of baseball games where we've done the national anthem. Recently we went to Paris, France. That was a great experience.
And how did the French receive you guys?
Oh, they loved it. Yeah. They were just phenomenal hosts. I mean, it was such a great experience.
And what is the response you're getting when you play like at College DuPage or at high schools or any place where perhaps there are people who are curious about being a musician in the Marines?
Oh, it's always positive. I like going to play at these venues just because it shows that there's an option, you know, for people that are considering being performing musicians. You know, this is a steady paycheck. If this is something that they don't, or that they've never heard of, mm-hmm. or, you know, the Department of Defense is one of the largest employers of musicians, if you think about it, because of the military bands that we have. And, you know, so it's great, especially for college students, to just be like, this is a window.
And for people who are passionate about music, I mean, Corporal Julia Tapper, do you think you would have been playing music like this long or developed your skills if you hadn't become a musician in the military, in the Marines?
I always had a passion for it. I don't think I'd be into it as much if I wasn't here right now, but I really learned to love it.
It will, and you guys really play so beautifully. So, Sergeant, mm-hmm. the Jewels.
Yeah.
We won't go with Dud Jewels because I don't know what kind of language they use in Seattle for the Seahawks. why don't you just call him Seahawk? I don't know. That doesn't work. You don't like that one either.
I don't know.
No. What kind of work do you, when you guys are working together, what kind of rehearsal schedule are you on? What's the daily routine for you guys?
It really varies depending on, you know, what's coming up and what we're focusing on. But just a rough schedule would be something like you come in, you might do a rehearsal, might do like a field drill, which is practice marching.
Mm-hmm.
And then so small band rehearsals and large band rehearsals, depending on, you know, what, like I said, what our schedule's like. And then maybe in the afternoon we'll do some PT, physical training, and we'll do more of those maybe small band rehearsals. So throughout the day it's a lot of rehearsals, but at the same time we always take time for training events as well. So like shooting on the range and swim qual and annual training events like that.
And see, because one of the things that a lot of people have been talking about recently, I don't know how much you follow like any of the legislation. One of the things that I think I tagged you, Sergeant Paraco, was kind of this attitude that people have. Well, what do we need musicians for in the military? We have more important things to do. Do you want to talk a little bit, Sergeant Iannelli?
Corporal.
Oh, I didn't mean to promote you. I apologize. Okay. I was just making sure I got your name pronounced correctly. Corporal Victor Iannelli. What would you tell people who are like, well, you know, isn't it more important to train them to be, you know, to be soldiers than to let them play music?
Well, to be fair, every Marine is a rifleman. We do all have that in common. We start. And what I think, my personal opinion, is that the civilians, they won't see the grunts. They won't see the machine gunners, they won't see artillery, but as far as public affairs go, they will see the band. They will go out and see a Marine band play at a museum, at a ceremony, at an opening, and it might be the first and last Marine they'll ever see. So we hold a very important role, whereas, you know, we want to look presentable, keep our uniforms looking spiffy, and just be nice to these people, because we might be the only Marine that they ever see. So I'd argue that our job is very important.
And do you think your training as a Marine affects the way you play music? It just occurred to me, by the way, because I was, and this is just a personal aside, because my son just played in his first recital yesterday on the guitar, and I was watching all of you play, and you all have a different style. But do you think that, like, the sort of precision of your training affects your music at all? And anybody can answer if it's something that occurs to you.
I think kind of at this stage in the game, as far as how long we've been playing, we try to apply everything we do to itself. So, I mean, there are a lot of almost techniques that you learn from just even shooting a weapon that you can apply over to your instrument. And so it's odd to think about it that way.
Right.
But there's, I think everything we do ties into itself. And we try to treat, when we train for one thing, we try to treat that as if we're training for everything. We try to apply that.
Because that's one of the things that I noticed when I was at at boot camp is that everything is done for a reason. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that becomes part of the way you approach everything, whether it's firing a rifle or playing the keyboard or playing the bass or the guitar, the drums and the saxophone. I wanted to ask, I want to make sure I get everyone's names right. Sergeant Barney, it's throwing me off again. What would you want to tell parents or anyone who's any kid who's maybe in high school and they're wondering if maybe this is an option for them? What would you want them to know about being a musician in the Marine Corps?
Well, if they're considering a job as a professional musician, mm-hmm. that's great. Music is my life. It's a hobby for all of us, and it's something I've always been into. But the option of doing it professionally is so far-fetched. Being a rock star or in an orchestra, you have to be very, very good. And we're pretty good, but you know, we're definitely not the top tier of musicians, and this job is attainable for people that are coming straight out of high school.
And that's the thing that's important to remember is, by the way, Craig, I need a quick moment of Googling with Patty Vasquez. Can you Google, there must be some rock stars that have served in the military, because I know there are comedians that have been in the military mm-hmm. and gone. I mean, by the way, like, who's the drummer? Go ahead.
Steve Gadd is one. He played for I'm drawing a blank off the top of my head already. Maynard Ferguson.
It doesn't eliminate just because Maynard. You go off and join when you become a military musician. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that your life stops. You're still developing skills, and whether it's going to be as a musician, as a citizen, or as a soldier, I mean, there's a lot of different things that it means in your lives.
Off the top of my head, I can think of Buddy Rich.
There you go.
Buddy Rich was in the Marine Corps.
And entertainers like Drew Carey.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah. Johnny Carson and Steve Allen. They were in the military. I know there are more since then. George Carlin, actually, was also in the military. I can only name comedians.
I think John Coltrane was, right? Correct me, Jules, if mm-hmm. I'm wrong.
Yeah. Some guy named Elvis?
Oh, Elvis might have been in the military.
Yeah, I don't know.
Some dude.
Jimi Hendrix?
Jimi Hendrix in the Army.
Yeah.
See, I mean,
Johnny Cash, I think, might have served.
I think that for a lot of young people, you know, especially now, did you have, are any of your peers, like, you know, when you decided to join the military, did any of your friends think, you're crazy. Why would you join the military now?
Yeah, wasting your life, throwing it away.
And what do you think of when they say things like that? I mean, I would think the opposite if someone told me they were joining the military.
I come home and they're still employed, they're still unemployed, mm-hmm. still living at mom and dad.
I met a young man who had come off off the Reaper, finishing the Crucible, and he was actually from France. He was about to get his citizenship as a part of his training too. I think that was leading to his citizenship. He had applied, and he was saying how surprised he was that Americans don't treat this as a civil duty, as an act of patriotism, mm-hmm. because in France it is. It's considered part of, you know, that's a source of pride. And I wish that we had more for our own men and women in uniform. And not just that, but when someone tells us that they're joining the military, it should be like, well, thank you is the first thing anybody should say. And I know that many of our listeners would say that to you if they had the opportunity. Thank you all so very much, not just for being in studio, for everything that you do and for what you symbolize, what you represent when you play for all the young men and women and everyone around the world. Thank you so much. More after this on 720 W. Here they are with Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Thank you.
That is the 1st Marine Division Jazz Rock Combo. We wish you guys the very best. Thank you so much for joining us in studio, and I hope you have a great time in Chicago. What's making you feel a little MC Hammer tonight, Craig? I can't. Are you not rolled up here?
Oh, no, that's not.
No, that's Super Freak.
That's actually Rick James.
That's the original track.
I'm Super Freak.
She's a Super Freak.
Oh, Super Freak.
It's actually for Brandon.
Is it a little bit of MC Hammer?
No.
Yeah, it's the same riff.
Yes.
It's the same riff.
He stole the riff.
Yeah, he stole
the riff.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, he gets in trouble for that. It's actually for Brandon C. Price. He is Pretty Late Super Freak.
Oh, I'll take that.
Oh, Super Freak. I like that.
After our conversation the other week, we figured that this is now his bump song.
We so enjoyed our post-mortem on that conversation, by the way, because we had somebody, one of our bosses, say that at first they wanted to go screaming into the night when they heard you talking about being polyamorous, let's just say. And then they decided that your conversation made a lot of sense, and they were completely drawn to it. So there you go.
Well, all right. Well, I'm glad the final product was no one was mad at me that works here.
Oh, I didn't say that works here. I was going to say, I don't know about no one being mad at you. No, but and that's why I like your take on a lot of things. I like your perspective. So when we were talking earlier today, Craig and I and Todd Manley were talking about a conversation that Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantes had with the president of the Chicago Teachers Union. I wondered, as an outsider, somebody who's not from Chicago, is that our history is completely embedded with long teachers, conflict with our teachers union between City Hall and the teachers union. When I was a kid, there were strikes every other year consistently. I had friends whose parents pulled them out of grade school and put them in parochial school to avoid more teacher strikes. In about 19, I believe the last big one was 1988. We had a teacher strike until the middle of October. So the school year did not start until the middle of October in 1988. And then for about over 25 years, we went without teacher strikes. And that was during most of Mayor Daley's reign over the city of Chicago and whatever relationship he had with the teachers union. I've never really understood what kept that relationship going. But when Mayor Emanuel came in, one of the things that became clear was that he wanted to be able to have the teachers union agree with what he wanted. He actually made it harder. He went to Springfield and made it harder for teachers unions to the proportion of teachers that had to vote for a strike. He increased that number, and they proceeded to reach that number, surpass it, and have a teacher strike within the first year of his mayoral term. So now that the state of Illinois is broke and the city of Chicago is behind on its payments to pensions and how much there's a shortfall in how much we owe to the Chicago Public Schools, the teachers have not had a contract in quite a while, I believe since last summer. And there was an offer put on the table. There were different parties. And I don't know where I stand on this, because I want my sons to have the best education they can. I know that we're broke. I also know that there are people who are struggling. There are people who are working, who are showing up for work, not getting paid, caregivers for some of our most needy. There are people who are disabled or elderly who have people still showing up, even though the state of Illinois has not paid them. There's one guy who keeps showing up after 7 weeks. He doesn't know how much longer he's going to be able to hold out, but he knows that if he doesn't show up, his patient will not survive without him. So the president of the teacher union was Karen Lewis was on the line today. Craig, do we have some of the conversation?
All right, Karen Lewis is joining us by way of telephonic device, and she, of course, is the president of the Chicago Teachers Union. And today, Ms. Lewis, the story is that you're saying that there's a very, very high likelihood. I think we're quoting you as 100% chance of a teacher strike. There's no hope between now, and I guess this strike would be about a little over a month from now, right? May 16th would be the earliest you could strike. Is that it?
That would be the earliest, yes.
Yeah. Why do you think there's no hope left?
Well, I mean, if this is what the board wants, which is something that was rejected before, then clearly we're not going to have any issues. However, I will say that the attorney for the board did text me and say he wants to meet. So we will be meeting
the Board of Education
Thursday, for sure.
So Forrest Claypool, the CPS CEO, is basically saying, Karen, that, hey, look, we don't even have a budget. We're going to have to borrow just to pay bills as it is, much less borrow to pay for increases, and is asking for teachers to share in the pain. What is it about the proposal that you rejected initially and now the very shockingly similar proposal that was brought to you again by the outside fact finder, that it's just a breaking point. Like, you just can't accept.
Well, first of all, sharing in the pain and sharing the sacrifice are just code words, Anna. They have no real meaning. What they mean is that you have to give and we're not. I mean, our issues are basically with governance. They get money and then they don't spend it appropriately. So that's problematic for us.
I think a lot of people feel that way, by the way. We're going to interrupt these conversations here and there. I think that everybody would say that the money hasn't been spent wisely by the government.
I mean, I think that's generally fair to say across the board with any governmental interaction any American ever has ever, right?
Right. I just think that this is a situation where you would say code words, saying that sharing in the pain are code words for you're going to suffer and we're not. I think that it's not, because I think right now, as opposed, and believe me, again, I don't know how I'm going to do this without ticking off teachers, because I know that what you do is valuable and you deserve everything that you want. But can we do it is the question. And will a strike achieve that? I don't know how. What are you squeezing a rock for water?
I don't know. I mean, like that. You know, the code word phrase that she used. I mean, obviously she's defending and explaining her position and therefore exaggerating or,
right,
you know, underlining points to get people on their side. I haven't heard anything yet that's like, well, that's absolutely ridiculous.
And what do you want?
I agree with that.
Right, exactly.
So if you're going to propose a problem, come with a solution.
Right. Let's see if we have more of a solution in the conversation. Sorry, we're going to stop and go. Craig was like,
those of us that work for CPS, even though I work for CTU, I still live in the city. You know, I am committed to this city. What we need is to make sure that we have some enforceable class size limits.
Okay,
so
that's
that
fair.
When they start laying people off, you know, they don't just shift kids into bigger classes. And that's something that they, you know, really wanted to do. And
I agree with that. Enforceable class size limits. Yeah, that's something. And the thing is that they've been doing that regardless. I don't know what their last contract was, but in particular when it comes to classes with children with disabilities, I know that at Beard it had been 7 students and now it's gone up to about 11 students. The thing there was, and other schools around the city, is that they would take what they considered to sort of be not like support positions, mm-hmm, whether it was aides or just not the teachers, the teaching staff, maybe it was counselors, they would tell them that they were let go. And then because they would say that, oh, well, we, you know, based on the enrollment that we think we have for next year, based on those numbers now, we have to let you go. And then the classes would enroll, they would have bigger numbers, and they would ask those teachers to come back or that support staff. And every year they would be let go and asked to come back, let go and asked to come back. So there is, I think that some sort of consistency is definitely important.
Well, I mean, even taking the money out of the equation, exactly, you have to offer some sort of, it's like a contract. Like baseball players play really well in their last year of their contract, but then they slump when they get it. But it's that consistency and that safety that,
right,
you don't have to stress and think about that kind of thing. And you're probably going to be able to do your job better.
See, so I think this is actually, we were taking apart, this is the first time I've had a chance to listen to Karen Lewis and go, okay, that doesn't make sense, but this does. 312-981-7200, feel free to join us if you have questions or you want to join the conversation, because I'm just trying to figure this out as we go, because the city of Chicago in a month is facing a teacher strike, and that's a massive situation to be in. 312-981-7200, more after this on 720 WGN. Go ahead and join the conversation. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, trying to get some perspective on the looming teacher strike. I know they said that they're going to strike in about 30 days. The president of the Chicago Teachers Union, Karen Lewis, has said that it's inevitable. She said it's 100% sure, based on the offer that they have right now, that they will go on strike. I've been sharing some of the audio with you, and I wanted to see what Brandon C. Price thought, just kind of as an outside observer. Craig, do you have any, I mean, when you hear Karen Lewis talking about, I mean, I think that enforceable class size makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? It's a little bit harder. Just because I have no real skin in the game. I don't have any kids in school or anything like that. So the teacher's struggles, well, it's something that we talk about a lot, so I'm familiar with everything going on. It's not as – I'm not emotionally connected to it at all.
Did you ever have teacher strikes, you guys, when you were kids?
No. I can't remember a single strike when I was in school.
Esmeralda?
No, me neither.
Did you?
None,
no. Juliet? Yeah. This is such a part of my childhood. Like, this really? Is what every other year was like, oh, we're not going to school right
I
now.
I mean, I think Sweet. The teachers deserve a lot of the things that they're asking for. I think it's the same as you guys are saying, though. How much of it is realistic and how many things can they accomplish? And when is it just waiting for something that's never going to happen? And in the process, harming a lot of people, like, you know, the kids that need education.
Yeah.
Well, it's easy to say we need it, you know, and it's easy to point out the fact that where would it come from? And then so they get into that conversation of, well, it's how the money was, you know, spent out by,
yeah, right.
exactly by the government. So that is the problem. And that's great. We found out what the fault was. But that is not necessarily tied or related to in any way to the solution of the problem at hand right now.
Right.
Long term, absolutely. That would change things from happening again negatively in the future. But our problem right now can't be answered just by finding the blame in the misappropriation
right.
of funding.
Or accusing people of using code words. And also saying everyone they're going to feel the pain. I smarted at that when I heard it from a representative last year before the state budget impasse, you know, when we realized they were not going to meet the deadline. He was saying that everyone's going to have to sacrifice. And I kind of felt that, I mean, to me it was, are you really going to start with our most vulnerable? Because that's who I think have suffered first. And now we've seen students losing their MAP grants. There were 150,000 students throughout the state of Illinois who had to leave school because they no longer had the grants that they were promised. Some of them are actually being told that they owe money back for money that they had already been given on grants. So that's happened. Can you imagine being a senior, you're that close to finishing? And we're about to lose our rating with some of our schools. Can we hear a little bit more of what Karen Lewis says is the issue? It's
real serious loopholes that need to be closed. And, you know, the biggest drivers for the district's financial crisis are charter expansion mm-hmm. and debt service. And these are not these have nothing to do with our salaries, our benefits, and whatever. But the notion that we would sign a multi-year contract where we make less than we did when we started is untenable.
But debt service does have to do with salaries, right? Because there's a finite amount of money.
Well, yeah, but the problem is the banks should get paid last. Why can't they get paid last? You know, I mean, why aren't there other ways?
Because then your debt service goes up.
Figure out some restorative revenue and some sustainable revenue. So there are things that we absolutely do agree on, and I think that's the problem that people don't understand. But we cannot afford any more charter schools. I don't care how much they love them, but we can't afford them. They are expensive. They are way more expensive than they ever said they would be. Charter schools were sold on the premonition that...
By the way, that word bothered me. Premonition.
Maintain.
I don't think
the only thing that's cheaper about charter schools is how much they pay their staff. Their management gets paid as much, if not more, than the management of CPS. So, I mean, it's problematic. But the drive to privatize is also horrible. I mean, there's some big
issues.
I agree with. The principals have issues with the way things are being done. It's not just us. I mean, there are a lot of people.
So can you look at your teacher's contract and say, we'll close or get rid of the charter school? I mean, I don't know if that's not a point of negotiating.
Explain to me exactly what a charter school is.
A charter school is the privatization of our public schools. And it is offered as and I don't know if they do it as a testing in. There are certain standards they have to meet federally. Mm-hmm. So they get some federal funding. They do get state funding. But they operate. They don't have their teachers are not unionized. They are run more like a corporation.
Then the students pay to go?
No. They're public school. The students do not pay to go there.
Okay. Is it like you have to test in to get into these charter schools?
Yeah, I've never been interested in any of the charter schools.
Yeah, but like
312-981-7200. You know, it's funny. We talk a lot about charter schools. I know hardly anybody. I knew one parent who had two children in the charter schools and it ended badly because one of her children had special needs and the other did not. And they, you know, she ended up having to fight with the charter school and with CPS because they wanted to pretty much have her child removed from the school because they said his behavior was not appropriate. And she felt like it was because they couldn't meet his needs. So that's the only personal experience I have with someone I know that had children in the charter schools. 312-981-7200. I know that there are some charter schools where they have different disciplinary systems, like where I think that like if you've broken some of the rules, you have to pay in or something, you get like fined.
Are they religiously based at
no,
all?
No, okay. They're public schools. I mean, they're charter schools, but I don't know how they function.
Isn't that weird? Like, so why, if money's going like to public schools and they're called, I mean, I just,
they're
I
called
don't
charter
know.
Schools,
yeah, exactly.
But they're run privately. They're, I don't know, only way I could think of is the privatization of public funding. I don't know where
is
the money
some
comes.
Of the money private that yeah. they get?
See? We're, oh, wait a minute. Okay,
you
Ray.
Also you also probably make money off of things like, you know, if you're getting money from the government or from private corporations, and then you have a specific budget for, let's say, food at the cafeteria, and then you hire down and you hire out Aramark or somebody like this very
Look,
low quality line of food.
About our stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and then so you save money on that budget, or you know, somebody probably on the board of Aramark that's on the board of this and this. You know what I mean?
This is what I'm saying here.
So I guess that's how they get more money.
More after this on 720. Ray, will get your comments after we take a break. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by the mad genius behind Vamp, Brandon C. Price. Every Friday and Saturday night, they have shows at 10:30. Go to vampchicago.com. It's a music comedy drinking show.
Patty, Patty 1,000 tonight.
And if you're riding our CTA Brown Line?
Brown Line, all over the Brown Line.
You'll see their fantastic posters. We were talking earlier about the Chicago Public Schools. We are on the verge of a strike within the next month. And we one of the things that Karen Lewis brought up is that we need to spend more time on the teachers and our public schools and less on charter schools. By the way, we were talking about what does it mean? What is a charter school? And here, so this quick summary. They're government finance schools operated by non-governmental entities. Typically, they share two distinguishing traits. The entity operating the school is independent of any school district and is not a government agency, and they do not serve students within specific attendance boundaries. So kids from anywhere can apply to be in those schools. Ray wanted to join the conversation first in regards to charter schools. Hey, Ray, what did you think?
Hey, how are you? It's not so much about charter schools, but I mean, I guess schools and just education in general. I mean, you're talking about the future of America, and it's really sad that we're shutting down so many schools, and there's just less and less opportunities for kids here in the city and just all over the country to advance and get to that next step. Instead of having, and I'm sorry, and like I don't mean to call out anybody, but I mean, we have a lot of the politicians that are going up in the races that are going on right now. I mean, none of them are bringing up plausible things that are going to help the future of America. And the future of America are the children here that need schools, and whether they're charter schools or not charter schools. I mean, I went to a private school, and to be honest with you, I only finished 2 years of a community college, and it's just, to be honest with you, it's expensive to go and finish your bachelor's degree or even pursue a master's degree.
Absolutely.
And it's really sad. I mean, it's sad that the fact that we're closing down schools and or they're charging this and that. And, you know, the city has so much money that's wasted year after year, and at the expense of what? The future of America.
Right.
I mean,
whether it's underfunding the teachers, the schools, the you know,
right.
all the foundation of what it's all built on. Mm-hmm.
I applaud the teachers for taking this stand. And honestly, you know what they're doing? I wouldn't even strike in the summertime. Why wait? Why wait? They're actually doing a favor for the, you know, and unfortunately, it's got to be at the expense of the parents who rely on the schools to give them some form of structure for their future. But unfortunately, you know, it's not there. And you should pay your teachers millions of dollars instead of these, don't get me wrong, these athletes, they put on great shows for us and whatnot, and, you know, movies and actors and this and that. That's great. But I mean, you know, the future of America relies on teachers.
I know. And that, I mean, what, you know, that's the thing is where are our values? Where do we put our most important attention, you know, whether it's money or just even giving accolades.
Right.
Good.
I mean,
yes,
it's sad. I mean, it's really sad. I want to go to school and further my education and continue my education. But unfortunately, it's very costly, one, and two, there's just not enough focus on education here in America.
Well, it's all about where the money comes from. So if you're striking to get more money, you should have an idea of, well, there at least is a place for money to come from. And you mentioned athletes and celebrities and things like that making millions of dollars, and I couldn't agree more. That's absolutely just awful to even look at. But the real money in this country is beyond that. It's in the banks. It's in Wall Street. And so you tax those guys, the guys we bailed out, and that's what invests in the future of our kids and the future of America. I think if you strike during the school year...
But they're the job makers, Brandon.
Oh, trickle down back to Reagan times, okay? This is 2016. This isn't... education can't be a free market, fair enterprise kind of a thing because, like, again, it won't be a fair slate. You start with different demographics, different regions, different levels of education, not only in the children, but the parents as well.
And running a school... like a business, schools aren't meant to make a profit.
No, you can't. You can't compete because then the people that are already ahead just financially in this world will always stay ahead and grow more and more and more. And then there will be kids left behind. And then what's happened to the future?
And I wonder, I mean, like the schools up in Wilmette, like in where New Trier is, those teachers make a lot of money. That's an incredible school. Then there's also great schools in the city of Chicago, whether it's Walter Payton, Whitney Young, Lane Tech. Mm-hmm. Those are public schools where, I don't know what the salary comparison is. I know Joe had some thoughts about charter schools. What do you think, Joe?
Okay. Hey, Gee, you just raised so many additional topics.
We knew you were coming, Joe.
That's right.
Okay. But, hey, congrats on the premonition scenario.
Right? That was. I know. When I heard her say that, I was in the shower, and I was like, I don't think that's what she meant to say, was premonition.
It might have been principal, but it
or predicated. Up. I think that she was something. It was a PRE sound, but yeah.
Whatever, yeah.
Precipitation
but it points
of
up
America.
The unuseful and the verbosity of some people that use words they don't know what the hell they mean, number one, and they shouldn't use any word in that venue, number two. Okay, back to the charter schools. Let me ask you a question, since you raised the point. Why can't you run a school like a business if you rule out profit? What I mean by that is get results. Look at the standings of the United States school system compared to the global economy or the global outlook for schools, period. We're number 26. And, you know, you could spot off, it'd take me 10 minutes to cite all the countries that are ahead of us. Japan, China, obviously. Okay, with few exceptions, we're lagging. Run a school like a business, create results, rule out tenure.
Well, but businesses are awarded by money. So when you say without profit, how as a business owner, why am I driven to privatize and own a school if I can't be driven by profit?
You're asking, here's the answer to your question if you want to listen to it. A business is run on success. Teachers run on success, producing a good student that has learned her lesson or his lesson. Okay, that's what I mean by run it like a business, not make a profit.
But how do I award a teacher for making a kid better? Like, that's intangible. Right. That's not going to pay my bills.
Joe, what does success gain? If my school succeeds and I own it, what do I get?
You get the knowledge that kids are producing.
Is that how businesses work?
They're going to have a career.
I don't think businesses look to gain knowledge. They look to gain something else, right, Joe?
Do you know Jack Welch? Do you know who he is?
The name sounds familiar. Why don't I know Jack
Man
Welch?
Who invented Welch's grape juice.
Oh. Yeah, right. He ran General Electric like an iron fist, okay? Uh-huh. Neutron Jack. His philosophy was cut 10% of your personnel. If the business is flailing or it's not, you know, doing number one type positioning, if you will. It was very successful for about a decade and a half. His philosophy is you want to make things that work, satisfy needs, and, you know, create a market. And make that market thrive.
And Mr. Welch, of course, made no money in the process, right?
I know, I'm not
just success.
That's a byproduct.
But I'm not seeing how that applies to charter schools.
Charter schools are non-union. They're based on success. Teachers have to do a fantastic job to get a great salary.
But it's so their money's still coming from public funding.
Yes.
And so you're telling me that the charter school that does better than the other one gets more public funding and therefore can pay their teachers more?
Well, and then
I think we had to model the entire system after a charter school. Number one, remove tenure.
Oh, so you mean privatize all public schools?
Reduce the tenure scenario, or get rid of it, I should say. Base teachers' compensation on productivity.
But productivity—that implies that we're starting from a fair, even board. Like you, if you start that whole system, there's people in rural West Texas that are not going to do as well as people in Upper Dallas. That's just how it is. That's just the education of the region.
To Brandon's point, and probably a reason.
That's a cop out.
No, to Brandon's point, and
it
probably
really is.
It will
granted,
probably
you're going to have areas of Chicago, the ghetto areas, whatever.
Yeah.
You're going to have to take all kinds of extra effort, not only money, okay, but you're going to have to recreate the family environment. You're going to do all that kinds of good stuff, okay?
Hold on. Craig had a thought.
One of the things that happens in a lot of charter schools that Patty will be very, worried about is that special needs kids get left behind. Special needs kids are often left out of charter schools so that their numbers are better, because obviously some kids in that group will struggle to get standardized testing the way that the other kids will, if that's how you judge success for a school.
That's one of the weak points of charter schools. I wholeheartedly agree.
So actually, then how do we remedy that? How do we remedy people choosing not to teach the kids that need it the most?
You have to create a separate environment for that. I don't disagree that that's a problem.
But that costs money, and you're saying that the successful ones get the money. So this one that isn't doing well needs the money but isn't getting it, but needs it more to get to that level of success.
And here's another wrench, Joe. Here's a story that Craig actually brought to me earlier last year. Sen High School, because there was so much encouragement and so much strain to perform better as a school, she actually discounted the special needs students' test grades.
Ouch.
And completely eliminated them so that her school would perform better because it was competitive. It was based on
bad.
Well, I mean, but I think that you drive a lot of the schools, especially because these aren't occupations where the profit margin is going to be huge for the teachers and whatever reimbursement or reward system that they have. See, it's a and as far as like you said, I think you said the urban areas or the ghettos or whatever, I think was the way you would put it.
Sure.
Investing in a community is we're nowhere near that, considering the fact that we closed over 50 schools in those neighborhoods.
Right, and as a child, I'm entitled to an education no matter how successful I am. If you talk about success and start pushing the schools to succeed, some of the children get left behind, and the whole no child left behind idea is thrown out. We can't leave kids behind. They deserve an education no matter how successful they are. It's not something where you start eliminating kids.
Well, I might be utopian. I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying. The bit about the dropping the kids because they didn't fit the routine, if you will, and their schedules would have been hurt by that. That's abysmal. I hate it. But, we've got to get somewhere to the point where the United States is no longer lagging the world in productivity for kids.
But that costs money. So I completely agree, Joe. I completely agree. So in your mind, where does the funding to make that happen come from?
Okay, well, let me look at where we're at right now. The average for teachers in a 25-year time span, starting salaries average about $35,000. Some people are up the $250,000 slot. The average teacher, low, intermediate, and upper end, is currently at $72,500.
Right.
That is, that's pretty healthy.
For the head of household for a family of, let's say, four?
Well, yeah, that's pretty comfortable, I would think. And where they really profit is the illegal or the corrupt, if you will, retirement policy they have on some of their pensions. And it's not for the lower rank and file, but definitely the intermediate and upper level people have availed themselves of that, and it's been in the Chicago Trib, for the last 3 years running. When do you want to retire on a $250,000 pension?
By the way, I'm looking at a website right now, trying to look at the median. The median is less than $50,000 for elementary.
I wouldn't argue with that. The starting is about $35,000 on average. The intermediate, but I'm saying you take the low end start, you take the median, and you take the upper end at 25-year service. That makes the average teacher, in that comparison chart, $72,500.
I don't know, the amount of responsibility and the work that they put into it, the long hours,
teachers.
Right.
Without teachers, what the heck?
But you bring up the pension and you bring up the tenure as if you're like, so is that you suggesting that that's where the money to improve the schools and improve the education comes from, is back from the teachers and back into the schools in a different way?
For starters, I'm saying it's not, it tells me that they're not at the point where they can't absorb 7% more of what it takes to cost for, of the cost of their health insurance.
But if I'm hurting the people that are leading the fight in making our students more educated, am I not cutting myself off at the legs?
That's not the point. We all agree there's corruption, there's money well ill spent, if you will, so forth
for
and
sure.
so on. But you're talking about charter schools versus regular schools. I want to see the school system itself run in more of a business-like, you know, forget the profit motive, but a business just like our governor's trying to do right now. Get work free. What is it? Free to work zones or something like that.
Right to work state.
Right to work state. There you go. Where you know you don't have to belong to a union. Where you and that's the problem with the CTU. It's their cotton picking union. I think most teachers. You know, I could be wrong. Could be totally wrong. But I think most teachers would love to be paid on their productivity. On the number of kids they turn out, and you know, rule out the ghettos where
I think it's,
you got to rebuild the family first. That type scenario.
I think it's so much more complicated on being able to be reimbursed or to be rewarded on productivity. Joe, as always, thank you so much, and it's always good to have the conversation with you. Always open to hear every side of the story. We've got to take another call from another listener. I think John's waiting to talk about
thanks
charter schools.
Thanks for your
school
premonition. Soon.
But yeah, thank you for your premonition
thanks,
too.
Adios.
Thank you. Bye, Joe. Yeah, I don't. I, you know, when we get into whether or not the governor is trying to run the state again, the state a government isn't supposed to run on a profit. What profit? You know, as far as I understand,
it's just too intangible. For me, in my opinion, the success. He's talking about the success rate of students, and that's how the teachers would want to be judged. What do you have to wait 20 years to see if that student really turned out as a positive member of society, or is it contributing a lot of money in taxes and that kind of a thing? And then how do you that's so intangible. Like, well, that kid looked pretty smart, so we're gonna give Miss Susan more money.
it's hard to, when you come down to these standardized tests. We've talked about this for the last couple of years too. Is it the standardized tests that we're giving them? Is it based? I mean, because if you're going to measure them all by the same scale, I think that becomes, like you said, intangible.
Well, you just absolutely cannot measure humans by the same scale in pretty much anything. We're all so different. I will fail miserably at writing a paper, but I can swing circles around calculus.
Here.
You know what I mean?
Write an essay on why you don't like to do calculus.
Well, I just want to make it real clear that I cannot do either, but this was a hypothetical point. I make things up in song for a living.
Yes, you do. Every Friday and Saturday night at MCL Chicago. You can go to vampchicago.com for tickets to their amazing show. It's a music comedy drinking show, and Brandon C. Price does an amazing job every single show that he does.
Thank you,
and check out their all their posters on the Brown Line CTA. You can catch the train and be like, hey, I know that guy. Are you in every picture in every cell?
I couldn't get in every one. There are a lot of talented people in the show. I am featured, I'd say. I do look very good in that picture.
I agree.
A couple quick texts before we drop the topic completely.
Yes.
From the 630, this is Mark. Those 26 countries ahead of the United States all have public school, not private ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the 708, yes, because allowing colleges to become for-profit has really worked out well for everyone.
That's super true. And that, you know, I tried to not go Bernie, but he said no candidate has given us an idea of how we should fix that. Well, actually, Bernie's laid out a very clear plan about taking money back from all those banks that we loaned it to and giving it to the kids. I don't know. That's crazy.
I know, but that's – even if that was something he could accomplish, we won't go down this path, but I don't even know how you accomplish that anywhere in the first term.
But don't you want someone that wants to?
I want someone that wants to. At least want it.
Did you see SNL last week? Bernie gets into the office. Yada, yada, yada. Everything's fixed.
Yada, yada, yada. Ta-da. Can I go yada, 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 ta-da? I think that's the way that should have gone. More after this on 720 WGN. Do we have a celebrity wake-up call? Do we decide who we're calling? We should probably figure that out. More after this. More after this. 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Brandon C. Price, who is the genius, mastermind, diabolical, I don't know what else to say about diabolical. I don't know why it'd be all diabolical.
It's everything. It's improv. You never know what you're going to get.
It's music, comedy, and improv. Comedy, music, and improv.
It's everything you need.
It's all those things. And a little bit of drinking.
If you're into that.
It's a live drinking show. It's every Friday and Saturday night at 10:30 at MCL. Go to vampchicago.com. I don't know who we're calling. This is a pretty late first. We're just calling somebody that Craig has chosen for us.
We are calling State Senator Dan Katowski to see if we can wake him up. We miss State Senator Katowski.
I kind of love that.
We're just seeing what's going to happen here.
Oh, this is fantastic. I hope that is ringing. I'm sure it's off.
It's 2 o'clock.
He called me on Friday and was like, "Give me a call." Or it was like one of those things like, "Give me a shout."
Does his number have the number playback? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Okay,
I think it's an automated. Let me think.
Let's see that in a second. He rings a lot. There's a lot of rings.
There's a lot of rings.
Yeah.
He's looking at the car ID.
It's so that's going to be the number. Senator Katowski.
Yeah, hold on.
There's his number. It's been a while since you've seen the senator.
Was he was here like a couple months ago?
Yeah, you hung out with him. The other one that laughed at the MyPillow commercial.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more.
It's very official. It's all automated. Hello, Senator Dan Katowski. It's Patty Vasquez.
Greg Collins.
Brandon C. Price.
Esmeralda Leon.
We're doing our wake-up call for you.
You're welcome.
That we missed you. Yes, you're so very welcome. I hope that he just saw the incoming number and went, oh, it's these fools again trying to call me.
Oh, my God. I will say this, Senator Katowski, that as soon as and this was a surprise even to Patty that we chose you as the person to call. As soon as I said your name, Patty's eyes lit up a little bit, like maybe
I don't know.
He
has like a full-time job and everything.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I would have actually, it would have been great if he'd answered because the comptroller, Munger, has said that she is not going to be paying legislators until they come up with a solution to our budget impasse.
Yeah.
But I don't know how that really, I mean, like it's also the governor. He's not taking a salary actually. So I don't know. There's
Seems
two pieces
to
that.
Idea going around that let's just stop doing things and paying people and maybe something will happen.
Well, and to that point, we discussed the issues with Karen Lewis and her interview with Will Kahn, and that seems like a voice that Dan Katowski would have loved to be another voice in the conversation.
I wonder what he thinks about charter schools.
Yeah, me too. I'm very curious.
Now I'm sort of sad he didn't answer the phone.
He'll call back any second.
Can you
wake up, Dan?
We want to know, Dan, can you run a school like a business?
Yeah.
Well, I wish there was answering machines that still spoke out loud, so if he was screening this call, we could just start yelling.
Does anybody still have any? I haven't used my answering machine.
Those tiny little tapes?
Yeah, no.
Well, then they went digital too. So, like, I still have my dad's last, like, one of his last calls to me. Like, I kept that answering machine. And I don't even know if it still works or not.
Yeah.
Like, I tried transferring it to an audio file, like
to
a Wave.
Somebody out there that can do that. Pop it on Reddit. Somebody knows how.
Yeah, I think I should do that. It's sort of a weird thing to keep. Are there any voicemails that you have?
Oh yeah,
that
I have. I have an old BlackBerry that doesn't have any service or anything on it that has several like.
Probably a reason.
That's a cop out.
No, to
yeah,
Brandon's point,
out.
And
it
probably
really is.
It will
Granted,
probably...
you're going to have areas of Chicago, the ghetto areas, whatever.
Yeah.
You're going to have to take all kinds of extra effort, not only money, okay, but you're going to have to recreate the family environment. You're going to do all kinds of good stuff, okay?
Hold on. Craig had a thought.
One of the things that happens in a lot of charter schools that Patty will be very, worried about is that special needs kids get left behind. Special needs kids are often left out of charter schools so that their numbers are better because obviously some kids in that group will struggle to get standardized testing the way that the other kids will if that's how you judge success for a school.
That's one of the weak points of charter schools. I wholeheartedly agree.
So how do we remedy that? How do we remedy people choosing not to teach the kids that need it the most?
You have to create a separate environment for that. I don't disagree that that's a problem.
But that costs money, and you're saying that the successful ones get the money. So this one that isn't doing well needs the money but isn't getting it but needs it more to get to that level of success.
And here's another wrench, Joe. Here's a story that Craig actually brought to me earlier last year. Sen High School, because there was so much encouragement and so much strain to perform better as a school, she actually discounted the special needs students' test grades.
Ouch.
And completely eliminated them so that her school would perform better because it was competitive. It was based
that is
on
bad.
Well, I mean, but I think that you drive a lot of those schools, especially because these aren't occupations where the profit margin is going to be huge for the teachers and whatever reimbursement or reward system that they have. See, it's a and as far as like you said, I think you said the urban areas or the ghettos or whatever I think was the way you would put it.
Sure.
There is investing in the community is we're nowhere near that considering the fact that we closed over 50 schools in those neighborhoods.
Right, and as a child, I'm entitled to an education no matter how successful I am. If you talk about success and start pushing the schools to succeed, some of the children get left behind and the whole no child left behind idea is thrown out. We can't leave kids behind. They deserve an education no matter how successful they are. It's not something where you start eliminating kids.
Well, I might be utopian. I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying. The bit about the dropping the kids because they didn't fit the routine, if you will, and their schedules would have been hurt by that. That's abysmal. I hate it. But, we've got to get somewhere to the point where the United States is no longer lagging the world in productivity for kids.
But that costs money. So I guess the question is, I mean, and I completely agree, Joe. I completely agree. So in your mind, where does the funding to make that happen come from?
Okay, well, let me look at where we're at right now. The average for teachers in a 25-year time span, starting salaries average about $35,000. Some people are up at a $250,000 slot. The average teacher, low, intermediate, and upper end, is currently at $72,500.
Right.
That is, you know, that's pretty healthy.
For the head of household for a family of, let's say, four?
Well, yeah, that's pretty comfortable, I would think. And you're here where they really profit is the illegal or the corrupt, if you will, retirement policy they have on some of their pensions. And it's not for the lower rank and file, but definitely the intermediate and upper level people have availed themselves of that, and it's been in the Chicago Trib, you know, for the last 3 years running. When do you want to retire on a $250,000 pension?
By the way, I'm looking at a website right now, trying to look at the median. The median is less than $50,000 for elementary.
I wouldn't argue with that. The starting is about 35 on average. The intermediate. I'm saying you take the low end start, you take the median, and you take the upper end at 25-year service. That makes the average teacher, you know, in that comparison chart, 72.5.
I don't know, the amount of responsibility and the work that they put into it, the long hours, and their own
teachers.
Right.
You know, without teachers, you know, what the heck?
But you bring up the pension and you bring up the tenure as if
yeah.
you're, like, so is that you suggesting that that's where the money to improve the schools and improve the education comes from, is back from the teachers and back into the schools in a different way?
For starters, I'm saying it's not, it tells me that they're not at the point where they can't absorb 7% more of what it takes to cost for of the cost of their health insurance.
But if I'm hurting the people that are leading the fight in making our students more educated, mm-hmm. am I not cutting myself off at the legs?
That's not the point. We all agree there's corruption, there's money well ill spent, if you will, so forth
for
and
sure.
so on. But you're talking about charter schools versus regular schools. I want to see the school system itself run in more of a business-like, you know, forget the profit motive, but a business, just like our governor's trying to do right now. Get work, free work, what is it, free-to-work zones or something like that?
Right-to-work state.
Right-to-work state, there you go. Where, you know, you don't have to belong to a union. Where you, and that's the problem with the CTU. It's their cotton-picking union. I think most teachers, you know, I could be wrong, could be totally wrong, but I think most teachers would love to be preyed on their productivity, on the number of kids they turn out, and, you know, rule out the ghettos where
I think it's,
you got to rebuild the family first, that type scenario.
I think it's so much more complicated on being able to be reimbursed or to be rewarded on productivity. Joe, as always, thank you so much. And it's always good to have the conversation with you. Always open to hear every side of the story. We've got to take another call from another listener. I think John's waiting to talk about
thanks
charter schools.
Thanks for your premonition.
Thank you for your premonition,
thanks,
too.
Adios.
Thank you. Bye, Joe. Yeah, I don't, you know, when we get into whether or not the governor is trying to run the state, again, the state, a government isn't supposed to run on a profit. What profit, you know, as far as I understand.
It's just too intangible, for me, in my opinion. The success, he's talking about the success rate of students, and that's how the teachers would want to be judged. What do you have to wait 20 years to see if that student really turned out as a positive member of society, or is it contributing a lot of money in taxes and that kind of a thing? And then how do you, that's so intangible. Like, well, that kid looked pretty smart, so we're going to give Miss Susan more money.
it's hard to, when you come down to these standardized tests, we've talked about this for the last couple of years too. Is it the standardized tests that we're giving them? Is it based, I mean, because if you're going to measure them all by the same scale, I think that becomes, like you said, intangible.
Well, you just absolutely cannot measure humans by the same scale in pretty much anything. We're all so different. I will fail miserably at writing a paper, but I can swing circles around calculus, you know what I mean?
Write an essay on why you don't like to do calculus.
Well, I just want to make it real clear that I cannot do either, but this was a hypothetical point. I make things up in song for a living.
Yes, you do. Every Friday and Saturday night at MCL Chicago. You can go to vampchicago.com for tickets to their amazing show. It's a music, comedy, drinking show, and Brandon C. Price does an amazing job every single show that he does. And check out their all their posters on the Brown Line CTA. You can catch the train and be like, hey, I know that guy. Are you in every picture in every cell?
I couldn't get in every one. There are a lot of talented people in the show. I am featured, I'd say. I do look very good in that picture.
I agree.
A couple quick texts before we drop the topic completely. Yes. From the 630, this is Mark. Those 26 countries ahead of the United States all have public school, not private ones. Mm-hmm. And then from the 708, yes, because allowing colleges to become for-profit has really worked out well for everyone.
That's super true. And that, you know, I tried to not go Bernie, but he said no candidate has given us an idea of how we should fix that. Well, actually, Bernie's laid out a very clear plan about taking money back from all those banks that we loaned it to and giving it to the kids. I don't know. That's crazy.
I know, but that's – even if that was something he could accomplish, we won't go down this path, but I don't even know how you accomplish that anywhere in the first term.
But don't you want someone that wants to?
I want someone that wants to at least want it.
Did you see SNL last week? Bernie gets into the office. Yada yada yada, everything's fixed.
Yada yada yada, ta-da. Can it go yada yada yada, ta-da? I think that's the way that should have gone. More after this on 720 WGN. Do we have a celebrity wake-up call? Do we decide who we're calling? We should probably figure that out. More after this, 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Brandon C. Price, who is the genius, mastermind, diabolical, I don't know what else to say about it. Diabolical. I don't know why it'd be all diabolical.
It's everything. It's improv. You never know what you're going to get.
It's music, comedy, and improv. Comedy, music, and improv.
It's everything you need.
It's all those things. And a little bit of drinking.
If you're into that.
It's a live drinking show. It's every Friday and Saturday night at 10:30 at MCL. Go to vampchicago.com. I don't know who we're calling. This is a pretty late first. We're just calling somebody that Craig has chosen for us.
We are calling State Senator Dan Katowski. To see if we can wake him up. We miss State Senator Katowski.
I kind of love that.
We're just seeing what's going to happen here.
Oh, this is fantastic. I hope this is ringing. I'm sure it's off.
Yeah. It's 2 o'clock.
He called me on Friday and was like, give me a call. It was like one of those things like, give me a shout.
Does his number have the number playback? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Okay,
I think it's an automated. Let me think.
Let's see that in a second. He rings a lot. There's a lot of rings.
There's a lot of rings.
Yeah.
He's looking at the car ID.
That's Senator Katowski. Yeah, hold on. There's his number. It's been a while since you've seen the senator.
Was he was here like a couple months ago?
Yeah. You hung out with him. The other one that laughed at the MyPillow commercial.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more.
It's very official. It's all automated. Hello, Senator Dan Katowski. It's Patty Vasquez.
Craig Collins.
Brandon C. Price.
Esmeralda Leon.
We're doing our wake-up call for you.
You're welcome.
That we missed you. Yes, you're so very welcome. I hope that he just saw the incoming number and went, oh, it's these fools again trying to call me.
Oh, my God. I will say this, Senator Katowski, that as soon as I, and this was a surprise even to Patty that we chose you as the first to call. As soon as I said your name, Patty's eyes lit up a little bit, like maybe
I don't know.
He hasn't done this.
He has like a full-time job and everything.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I would have actually, it would have been great if he'd answered because the comptroller, Munger, has said that she is not going to be paying legislators until they come up with a solution to our budget impasse.
Yeah.
But I don't know how that really, I mean, like, it's also the governor. He's not taking a salary, actually. So I don't know. There's two pieces to that.
Seems to be this idea going around that let's just stop doing things and paying people and maybe something will happen.
Well, and to that point, we discussed the issues with Karen Lewis and her interview with Mo Khan, and that seems like a voice that Dan Katowski would have loved to be another voice in the conversation.
I wonder what he thinks about charter schools.
Yeah, me too. I'm very curious.
Now I'm sort of sad he didn't answer the phone.
He'll call back any second.
Can you
wake
run
up, Dan?
We want to know, Dan, can you run a school like a business?
Yeah.